Hey, welcome in. Time for KER Politics and our daily editorial. I want to start out this editorial by saying hello to all of my good friends at Aljoya. You guys are very interesting people, and I'm thoroughly enjoying talking to each and every one of you in person when we meet in the halls, etc., etc. Jimmy, you are pretty interested in what's going on in Taiwan right now. The number of U.S. troops sent over there for training has gone from 70 to 200. Does Biden know something that we don't know, Jim? What's going on?
Well, I don't think he knows anything that we don't know. I think we, the rest of us, he probably, Biden doesn't know a lot that we all see right now. And it went, the actual troop number was, according to Wall Street Journal and a number of reports out there, that previously was about 30 people there training.
Yeah.
So let me give a little bit of context. We've been training and equipping Taiwan for now a couple of generations.
Right.
Since the movement by Chiang Kai-shek to Formosa, to the island of Taiwan, and we've equipped and trained them. We've sold them weapon systems, and they actually bring their aircraft to the United States, and they fly and train out of Holloman Air Force Base down in New Mexico. So there's been a relationship for a long period of time. All their weapon systems are mostly U.S.-made weapon systems. So there's been a long-term training relationship and equipping relationship with Taiwan. What there were, apparently, were about 30 people inside Taiwan that helped and assisted up as of last year. This is according to many reports. And of course, because I was a former security assistance officer in multiple embassies, the relationship, what they call the security assistance program, or the SAOs, the SAO officer, Office of Defense Cooperation, that's, we have those in many, many countries around the world.
Yeah.
So what is happening right now is according to this reporting, the U.S. is increasing the number of trainers and people to help understand U.S. systems and equipment from about 30 that were there last year to about 200.
Yeah, it's a big increase when you stop and think about it. It really is. I am thinking right now that the world is so messed up that the situation regarding the relationship between mainland China and Taiwan, I don't think we're going to see any action there, Jimmy, at least for a short period of time. What do you think?
Well, I think we're seeing action right now, and the Chinese have been signaling very strongly that they want the Taiwan breakaway, what they call is a breakaway element. They want that island back under their control.
Of course,
and again,
they do.
I'm going to say,
yeah.
And so I'm going to say the reason why is because they fear, one, because of the economic power of Taiwan. They produce 70% of the world's semiconductor silicon chips, semiconductor chips. They have it's really a geographical strategic location that controls access to Malacca Strait of Malacca, these key routes that about half the world's trade transits through. So from a geostrategic perspective, the Chinese want control of that, especially as they look at expanding their influence in Asia and potentially the world. So geographically, militarily, politically, they're concerned about the expansion of what has become somewhat of an effective democracy in Taiwan,
yes,
and having that spread towards Beijing. That's a big threat to the Chinese Communist Party.
Well, in light of the environment with Hong Kong and the rest of it, mainland China, Xi Jinping is starting to be pretty careful because he really doesn't want to any of the progress that his country has made. He does not want to see that happen for naught, because China has made some very, very positive changes economically, etc. And I, for one, applaud the CCP for that. I don't agree with their philosophies whatsoever, but they have come a hell of a long ways, Jimmy.
Yeah, and Al, I'm going to be 100% in disagreement with you on this.
You know,
because
I love it.
Yeah, well, let me tell you why.
Okay.
Had the Chinese government in 1989 changed direction and done what most of the other Western Europe or Eastern European countries done and moved towards democratization,
yeah,
they would be so much more financially better off. They would be so much better with individual choice and freedom. The Chinese Communist Party, roughly 200 people, dictate the terms of 1.4 billion people.
That's right.
And that's just because they made a bunch of money, just because they've enriched themselves, it's given them more control over the population, and they really don't care about the individual or individual rights. So what we've done is we've subsidized a very – by – trading and expanding manufacturing and moving over there, we've subsidized a very corrupt system, a very authoritarian system that is absolutely negatively affecting many individual lives, both in China and eventually will spread to the rest of the world. Very dangerous precedent to allow them and for people to think that this is a positive move for the world. I mean, it's a dangerous situation. Whenever you have a small group of powerful people that control the economies, that control the politics, that control the media, that actually control the people through social credit scores, through tracking devices, through technology, you are allowing them to start things like potentially an invasion of Taiwan, which would be absolutely devastating to the people of Taiwan.
Of course,
and potentially
it would
undermine the entire stability in the China and of course global stability in the global economy, which hurts everyone. So, you know, that I think what's happening here is a very unfortunate circumstance where our leadership in the United States is making bad decisions that have allowed people to go forward with authoritarian rule by empowering them with technology, with money, with resources.
Right.
And eventually that allows those leaders, those authoritarian leaders, tyrannical leaders, to take over very powerful, influential positions in the globe. And the United States is falling behind.
Jimmy, I got to tell you, I agree with everything that you said. I think you took what I said perhaps in the wrong method. I have never approved of China's politics, their policies towards society. But in terms of being a country that has truly grown out of the shadows, I think China really is a force to be reckoned with.
And there's no question. I agree with you on that.
Yeah, and there is no way that I would ever undermine the capability of the Chinese. No way whatsoever. I mean, I would put, in terms of a leader of a very, one of the leaders of one of the powerhouses of the world, I would put Xi Jinping 87,000 steps ahead of Joseph Biden. I got to tell you.
I will say he's thinking a lot better and he's got a lot better coordination on events right now than our leadership does. And that's a sad state. That's a sad state of affairs as far as I'm concerned. And that's and actually what we're seeing now with these incremental increases, 200 troops is not going to mean anything other than, you know, potential dead bodies if, in fact, China invades.
Yeah, that's true.
And the problem is we don't really have the capacity to defend Taiwan. So it's kind of a diplomatic maneuver here to kind of show some strength in the U.S. Pacific, Asia Pacific or Indo-Pacific command.
Yeah.
And of course, the Taiwanese, I'm sure, are very concerned about all the threats that they've been facing from China with massive numbers of overflights of their air defense intercept zone, the ADIZ. With a large number of operations and training events that make it look like an amphibious assault would be very possible. The massive growth of Chinese military amphibious capabilities and the ability to target U.S. carrier groups and jam our information systems. And, of course, the massive intelligence collection, what we just saw with the balloon transit over the United States. Preparing for war. These are very big signals. Preparing for war, and what
are
we doing?
You think that the blimp is a signal that China is preparing for war, Jim?
Absolutely. If you look at the track of where that balloon went, it went over our strategic missile defense systems and our communication systems and many of our satellite control locations.
Yeah.
So what that does they were filling an intelligence gap with a flight that they couldn't get information from higher altitude satellites, or didn't have the technology or the capability to do that.
Right.
And they were low enough that they could actually trigger network nodes, and they could collect that information and actually prepare and use that to prepare for targeting if, in fact, it came to war. Doing it was a very bold statement, especially as Tony Blinken, the Secretary of State, was scheduled to travel to Beijing to talk to him about reducing support and not giving weapons to Russia that same week. These are huge political and diplomatic indicators of standing strong, and we are failing. The United States is failing miserably to understand them, to read them, and to react in any type of effective method.
I don't particularly disagree with that either, Jimmy. I really don't. But, I kind of want to say one thing that I feel very strongly about. We are in a real period of turmoil, dangerous turmoil, as far as the world is concerned, as far as the world in a macro sense is concerned. We have so much violence in our major cities that it's almost scary. It's been going on for a long time, and people need to be aware that it's been going on for a long time, because it has. I remember when I still ran my business, I used to make somewhat frequent trips to Los Angeles and San Francisco. And I remember I was staying at the LA Athletic Club at one particular time, and I had my jogging shoes. I was a real avid runner back in those days. And I asked the people at the club behind the desk, where's a good place to go jogging from here? And they all got this ashen look on their faces and said, there is no place. It's so violent out there. We guarantee you, you're going to get hurt if you go out and jog. I had the same experience in San Francisco. I had the same experience in Detroit. So the violence in America right now, I would have to say, is of a much higher degree than it was back then. But it still exists in a major sense as it did back then, Jim.
Well, and what we've seen after 2020 with this major, the summer of 2020 with this major push after the George Floyd events and the riots is to defund support for police. And of course, we've had this massive influx of money, election money, going to prosecutors in some of these major urban areas from the Soros Foundation, from George Soros, in order to elect very progressive prosecutors that are looking at things through a racial context and allowing people to basically allowing criminals to continue to do crimes and not holding them accountable. And of course, this is becoming very dangerous in many of these big urban areas. You're seeing massive increases in murders or massive increases of violent crime of Chicago car theft. It's of course the looting, and many of these places aren't even reporting the real numbers because they don't have the resources, and they stopped reporting them because these prosecutors don't care. These Soros funded prosecutors don't care. And what we see right now in St. Louis with Kim Gardner and the attorney general from Missouri threatening her, telling her she had to resign by noon today. I do not know what the answer was, because she allowed a criminal back on the street, hit a girl, a 17-year-old girl who was a volleyball player, and the 17-year-old girl lost both her legs, and this criminal had 50 previous arrests, and she let him on the street, and she still wasn't going to arrest him for this event.
That is absolutely amazing to me. I can see no rationale whatsoever for the action on the part of the attacker. I can see no rationale for that. I can see rationale behind some of the idiots, for example, that took part in the street crime in Seattle a couple of years ago. I can see rationale to what's going on with the, very major dangerous events going on in Portland, Oregon. Same with San Francisco, same with L.A., but I cannot understand the perpetrator's rationale when he put that girl in the hospital. I just don't get it.
Well, we're seeing it. Andrew Bailey, the new attorney general in Missouri, he told Kim Gardner that she has till noon today to actually announce her resignation, or he will remove her from office or start the process to remove her from office.
Wow.
So this is got to happen. And I would say that she actually should be held liable for some of these these events. Now, Kim Gardner, the St. Louis attorney, she's the one that arrested the couple.
Right, with the guns, the AKs, right.
With the AR, after people were protesting in the George Floyd riots, as they broke through a fence and went into their yard in their neighborhood on their way to protest against the mayor's house, and they stood on their yard to protect themselves from it, and she arrested him for holding a weapon. And of course, you know, this is that turned into a fiasco. There's been numerous people that have been released that have reoffended and actually hurt and killed people. She's let murders and a tremendous number of victims go. And then she's actually filed charges against conservatives that turned out to be false.
Yeah.
And that's been over and over again. So we have one example here. You had a similar example in Florida where Ron DeSantis did this year and a half ago, fired a prosecutor because they were failing to uphold the law. More of this has to happen. More of these attorney generals and more people have to stand up and say, you've got to put these violent criminals and these repeat offenders back into prison. Now, there's plenty of opportunity to do reform out there and ways to do things smarter and better. Always an opportunity to do that. But allowing criminals to go back out on the street time and time again that have a history of violence or extensive issues, they're living in a world that they think they can get away with anything. And unfortunately, in some of these major urban areas, they are.
You bet. Exactly. That's exactly what's going on right now. Scares the daylights out of me, Jim. It really does. You know, where I'm living in Seattle right now is kind of the north end of Seattle, an area called Northgate, and you almost don't have any tent cities out here. The streets are certainly perfectly safe out here, but it's totally different when you go downtown, Jim. It's scary.
Well, and again, you know, I remember 2 years ago living there in Washington when they gave the numbers of how much Seattle had spent per homeless person.
Oh, it was ridiculous.
My understanding was $385,000 per homeless person through different programs trying to support. And you know what they got out of that? More homeless people.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say probably more homeless people, yeah.
And more crime. Once a beautiful city, the Emerald City, and now, gosh, I won't take my children down there.
I won't go down to
Mike's place.
I don't blame you.
It's unbelievable how rapidly things have deteriorated. But what is interesting, more interesting to me than how quickly it deteriorated, is how many people still have their head in the sand and still support these policies that are absolutely detrimental to the weakest and the poorest people out there on the street.
Right.
These policies don't help. Allowing heroin dens and giving them free, methadone or heroin, that doesn't help drug addicts.
Not a bit.
Allowing people to live on the street does not help them.
Right.
It's actually detrimental and it hurts everybody. And of course, we're seeing ramifications of these very bad policies.
Right.
And many people still support those ideologies.
And the question is, why do they do it? I've never understood that. You know, I've been following politics now for the majority of my life, and I just don't understand some of the rationale that comes out of this, Jim.
I don't, Al, either. You see these pendulum swings, and eventually, until somebody personally gets hurt or robbed.
Yeah.
There was a congresswoman in D.C. recently, and she was a very strong living in her apartment in D.C. I can't remember. I think she may have been from another state, certainly from another area, was attacked in her lobby of her in her elevator.
Wow.
And it's on video, and she survived the attack, but she was a very strong defund the police advocate.
Yeah.
And until it happened to her, now she's like, okay, we've got to refund the police. You're seeing it actually in Seattle. Seattle's now saying, yeah, we're having a problem. We're going to have to go ahead and spend more money on law enforcement. I read that the other day.
Yeah. Well, the only comment that I could make is maybe Seattle is starting to wake up. I mean, I've known you for a long time, Jim, and for that entire length of time, we've talked a lot about Kathy's and my experience in Seattle on the streets whenever we went down for a visit. Now, that had to be 10 years ago, and I have to say it wasn't safe, man. It was not safe.
No, and it just keeps getting worse.
Right.
And, of course, every other bit of the infrastructure, a lot of you know, the traffic, all the quality of life is, and the expense is really high. It's a beautiful place, and I'd love for it to continue to be.
So, I agree.
But you have to put in policies that actually benefit the community, benefit society, and hold people accountable for bad actions. And, you know, everybody's got a story. That doesn't necessarily justify why they're on the street or hurting someone else.
Right. No, so you can't allow that. Not even close. I agree. Jimmy, I wanted to, we've got a probably another, I don't know, we got a few minutes left here. I want to talk about the Republican presence and what the Republicans are doing in your state, South Carolina. I'm looking at, for example, Tim Scott. It looks like he's making a big move right now. Now, I don't know if he can take on Trump. I really don't know. I'd like to get your opinion on that, and I would like to get your opinion on Tim Scott.
Yeah, well, Tim Scott, definitely a nice guy. Not a powerful, dynamic figure. I think you're right. I don't think he would be, a very competitive guy against Ron DeSantis, Donald Trump, even Nikki Haley in some respects.
Yeah.
Though he is getting a lot of support. He raised over $40 million in his campaign for Senate this last term.
Right.
And he has about $22 million left in that account. So he could switch that over to a presidential campaign, and that's a very powerful starting point. And then he's got apparently about $17 million in a super PAC. So that gives him, you know, about $40 million, close to $40 million in money that could go towards a campaign. So there's speculation that he may announce. He's a nice guy. He's a good guy. He kind of fits the mold of what many people think is the solution for, racial division, because he's a conservative, black Republican.
Yeah.
And then you've got Nikki Haley. Nikki Haley is announced. She's formally announced. She has apparently about 10 or 12, maybe 8 to $12 million in a PAC that is supporting her, but she has not announced, and I've just listened to this on the radio here locally in South Carolina News, she has not announced her actual fundraising for her campaign after her announcement, and it's, you're required to after raising $1 million. So it looks like in her campaign in the last week and a half since she announced, she may not have raised even $1 million. That puts her behind a lot. Especially because so much of this is about getting your message out through spending money and commercials. So and of course, having a campaign staff, very difficult position to be in if that's the case for her. Tim Scott has a different advantage. That's two people out of South Carolina. We have not heard anything from Ron DeSantis yet. He's been very careful. Donald Trump was out on the road in East Palestine, Ohio.
Yeah, saw him. I actually saw that. Yeah.
He brought trailers worth of water out of his own pocket.
Right.
Very big statement before any of the major senior leaders other than the EPA director from this administration.
I agree, Jim. I agree 100% with you on that one. I think that Trump is doing all of the right things. My only problem with Trump is I really feel that the president of the United States needs to have a bit of a conciliatory personality. Donald Trump does not. Most people look at that negatively. I don't necessarily look at it in a negative sense, because Trump did get things accomplished when he was actually in office. I just wish that he could become a little more likable.
Well, I think he is. I think he's becoming more likable. I think a lot of the media attacks that were there before have softened a little bit, not because there isn't a desire to do that, but because he's being a little more careful of what he says and what he does.
Right.
Look, we have a president right now, Joe Biden, who stumbles on his, when he gets on his airplane, who cannot complete a speech without making a very dramatic faux pas. He's made really ridiculous remarks, and he is confused. He has very little control of what's happening in the world right now. Certainly doesn't manage the border, doesn't manage many of the issues within his own administration. You're hearing none of that from the mainstream media. Most people have no idea because they don't listen, they don't know, they don't follow things as effectively as some of our listeners do. At the same time, you had Trump that was fighting through entire witch hunt, ridiculous, fraudulent Russia collusion narrative through his entire time, the Ukrainian phone call impeachment process, members of his own administration that were absolutely complicit in using, in tubing him, including in the Department of Justice and the FBI, in undermining him. And somehow he managed to do policies that helped our economy stay stable, that lowered inflation, that did a very good job at getting the border back under control, that kept peace and stability throughout the world, negotiated with North Koreans, got agreements in peace agreements with four Arab nations, with Israel, unheard of.
That was actually his son, Jared.
Well, no, Jared was involved with it, but Donald Trump's administration managed that.
Okay,
he was
right,
responsible
I'll buy
for that.
Sure. Okay.
Yeah. You know, he didn't do any of these things himself, but it was an administration that was managing problems for America in a very good way, and then got crushed with a completely crazy COVID pandemic narrative that undermined the entire stability of the United States and the world.
Right, I agree.
And he still put forward an effort to try to solve it through, you know, massive involvement with the government, did some amazing things, but the entire time was being hammered by the press. Always, you know, fraudulent information that came up, spent all the time from different operatives that used the press and media. So your perception is what many people think. Oh, he's a mean guy because he does mean tweets.
I'm just saying
that's what many people believe, right?
Yeah, I realize that. What I'm saying is I wish that he could be a little bit warmer and fuzzier, and that's all I'm saying.
I'm not saying
he's a bad guy. I'm just saying I don't think he's got the personality for it.
Well, I think he was. He was the president for 4 years, and
that's
I think he was ripped out of a second term, which would have been much more effective, and so many people were afraid of how effective it could have been. They had to undermine it. So I don't think we need a warm and fuzzy guy. I think we need a fighter to get pushed back against what's happening in America right now with this control of the state by administrative agencies, by pushing agendas that are undermining actually families, that are taking away economy, that are keeping people on the street. We need a fighter.
I don't disagree with that, Jim. I don't disagree with that. My preface right now, my philosophy on life on planet Earth right now is as follows. It's very, very dangerous, regardless of what country you are going to. The violence in the streets right now doesn't pertain just to the United States. It pertains to almost every single country in the world now. And that's really sad, because that means the level of frustration is very, very high.
Can't disagree with you with that. At all. Yeah. I agree with you 100%. We are facing these pressures are really undermining faith in our institutions. They're faith in our government, and they're actually undermining faith in each other. We've got to get that back.
And that's sad. That's very, very sad. You guys, as soon as I put this up on the web, I'm going to go back to yesterday's comments. There were some kind of interesting ones that I wanted to weigh in on. And then when I get back to those comments, I'll come back here and I'll go to the comments, whatever comments come in today. Jimmy, it's going to be a lot of fun, and we are seeing an aspect of history that I never thought I would see in the United States of America. I never thought I'd see this.
Pray for America right now.
Oh, you got to pray for America. There's no question about that. Jimmy, I'm going to talk with you tomorrow morning. Thank you so much, bud.
You bet, Al.
To find out more about today's guest, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You are listening to KER Politics. We will be back in a moment.